When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Window, the only podcast that brings you the news before it becomes news. And we also, of course, give you insight and analysis into all the subjects you're talking about in football. I mean, McGarvey, and with me, as always, is the transfer guru, Duncan Castles. On today's pod, we will be speaking about Manchester City, Inter Milan, Barcelona, Tottenham Hotspur, Liverpool, as well as others on our agenda. Duncan, we start, and I must admit, personally, I'm quite sad about this, but almost the end of an era at Manchester City with confirmation, which of course we did flag up to our listeners in a podcast before last Christmas, that Sergio Aguero's contract would not be renewed at the Etihad. And of course that was confirmed this week by Manchester City officials and by Aguero himself with regards to his imminent departure this summer. At 32, and the club's highest goal scorer on record. It does seem somewhat abrupt, however. Aguero wants to pursue new opportunities. And Duncan, as you've said in the past, he and Pep Guardiola don't always see eye to eye with regards to style of play, although that did change when Aguero put himself into a situation where he worked harder in terms of the high press and tracking back. It's a big boots to fill, even if in the last two seasons, Aguero's not been as prolific as he was in his first eight seasons at the club. What do you think this is going to do, Duncan, in terms of City's makeup? Because clearly they're going to have to look to replace him. In fact, they struggle in terms of strikers, and Guardiola has taken to playing false nine, albeit, of course, they're in a very demanding and commanding position in the Premier League in terms of winning it. They still don't have Aguero's scoring might that they've depended upon for so many years, and four Premier League titles.
Yeah, look, this is something they've been preparing for some time, and as we've discussed in the podcast, it's a very, very important recruitment decision for them, because strikers are expensive, and you're replacing someone who's had a decade of service at Manchester City, broke a host of records, currently stands on 257 goals and 384 games, four Premier League titles, about to become five, five League Cups, maybe about to become six, and one FA Cup. The only thing he hasn't done at Manchester City is win the Champions League, which arguably you can say was the principal reason, ultimate reason for buying him. And one of those very successful transfers that Abu Dhabi made. They came in, they said, we want to buy best possible players we can get on the market, and we will pay whatever it takes to get them to come in. And Aguero was one of those, alongside Yaya Toure, who have transformed the club and built the framework in which you can bring someone like Pep Guardiola in to try and finish the job. You can convince Chiqui Bergiristan to come in and continue the transfer process. And yeah, this is a big test for Chiqui Bergiristan, because he has to identify the striker who can replace Aguero, provide those goals, fit into the system. There are plenty of strikers on the market this summer. We've highlighted that there's likely to be a lot of movement in that area of the field, but not necessarily an obvious fit. And we told you that Erling Haaland is on the recruitment list, as he is on the recruitment list of just about every big club in Europe. But it's not a simple process of saying we will go and spend the money required. And I note in the past week that Dortmund have signalled that the asking price they want for Haaland is 180 million euros. I think not coincidentally the same amount of money that Paris Saint-Germain signed Kylian Mbappe for a few years ago. It's not a simple process of going for the youngest player who scores lots of goals. You have to get someone who fits into that system. And we did a pod recently talking about how Dortmund have not been convinced that their team as a whole have actually improved by having Haaland in it, despite the almost ludicrous numbers he's put up while being part of the team. They're struggling in the Bundesliga and struggling at the moment to qualify for the Champions League. So not an easy decision. I think also what won't be an easy decision is where Aguero goes next. And I think you have some information on the offers and possibilities that are open to him, and that he hasn't yet made a decision on what he's going to do next season.
No, Duncan, that's correct. He did have the opportunity to leave in January. It is our understanding at the Transfer Window podcast that he was informed in January that his contract would not be renewed in the summer. Therefore, this is not the kind of surprise stroke shock announcement that I think a lot of people have been taken in by. However, Aguero opted to stay at Manchester City in order to see the season out, give himself the opportunity to win more trophies. Of course, they're still in the market for four of those. And of course, the Champions League being the one more than most that he covets, as well as obviously the owners of Manchester City being that and Guardiola himself. However, he does have interest from Inter Milan and from Barcelona. A player of his reputation can command obviously a move to some of the biggest clubs. However, he will have to take a pay cut in the post-pandemic or current pandemic situation. The salary earned at City is very unlikely to be replicated elsewhere. I don't think that's a problem for Aguero. Obviously, he has a good relationship with Leo Messi. That could be a factor if he wanted to move to Camp Nou, if Messi was going to stay there, although there's nothing certain about that. Interestingly, and again, we did report this on the Transfer Window, Paulo Dybala, his contract negotiations with Juventus in terms of extension have broken down, and he could well be the like-for-like replacement for Aguero at City. However, Aguero himself needs to make a decision. Obviously, he could return to his home country of Argentina and play for the likes of Boca Juniors there. But I'm not sure he's quite ready to do that, given that he is, as I said, 32 years old. There are players playing until much longer in their careers, beyond 32. Look at Zlatan Ibrahimovic, for instance. And I think he'll stay in Europe. I think if Manchester City don't win the Champions League at the end of this season, then Aguero will go to a club where he believes he has the opportunity or the best opportunity to win a Champions League before leaving Europe and going back to Argentina. So the question, I think, for City is, as I said, who replaces them? You know, they have done well to survive without his prolific goal scoring during his time of injury and illness in the last two seasons. However, they must now make an investment, a significant investment, in a replacement. I mean, Gabriel Jesus, I don't think is trusted 100% by Guardiola. If he was, then he wouldn't be playing Kevin De Bruyne at a false nine in several games, as well as other players who have been trusted to score goals for City. So this is a Manchester City side who, you're right, Duncan, look like they're going to win the Premier League title, but Guardiola, more than anyone, knows that you must strengthen from a position of strength. If he is going to see out that extension to his contract, then he will demand a proper replacement and a proper number nine to play in his system. Dybala, I think, would be a good fit. Would you agree with that?
I think Dybala is one of those players who is on the market. Juventus have not been able to get a new contract deal with him, and if they can't get him on the terms that appeal to them after a very disappointing season by their standards, then he will be a player who will be for sale at a knockdown price. And yeah, there are elements of his stylistic play that you would say would fit into Guardiola's system. On Aguero, he has that offer to Barcelona, i.e. he's been proposed to Barcelona. We told you a few weeks ago in the podcast that Barcelona, while interested, do not see him as first choice for the position, and that Ronald Koeman wants to bring Memphis Depay in, also in a free transfer on significantly lower wages instead. Obviously, Koeman has got his wish to sign Gini Wijnaldum. Story we reported, I think, on last week's podcast, that there's a pre-contract agreement between the Liverpool and Netherlands midfielder in Barcelona. Again, that was Koeman signing that someone he tried to get last summer. I'm told there is also discussions with Paris Saint-Germain over Aguero moving there. And yes, Inter, but that he is not particularly minded to go to Serie A at present. And also there's an issue with Inter's finances. I mean, the 102 million euro loss they declared in their most recent accounts with substantial debts to pay off, and their parent company, Suning, now talking about bringing other investors in to try and make up for the money that they cannot are not being allowed to put into Inter by the Chinese government. Information is that he hasn't made a decision yet. What would be fun is if Manchester City and now are getting into a habit of commissioning statues for their long servant players. We'd give Aguero the choice of where he had his statue installed. Perhaps in Gary Neville's back garden would be a good choice for Sergio.
I'd love it. I'd absolutely love it if that happened, in the words of Kevin Keegan. Not sure Gary Neville would, but perhaps as a corner of his very extensive garden that they could find, that he wouldn't have to look at it every day. Yes, indeed. Statues of David Silva, Vincent Kompany and Aguero now have been commissioned in order to honour those players for their service. And of course, the fact that they have been integral to City's success in the past decade. A player who Manchester City may be interested in but may not be able to get is one Harry Kane. The Tottenham Hotspur England captain gave an intriguing interview while he was with England, in which he said that he would not consider his own future until after the Euros this summer, because he wanted to focus completely on the rest of Spurs' season and indeed on England. It is our information that Kane is seriously considering moving away from Tottenham Hotspur, and as a result, other clubs have been in touch with his representatives. We understand that the one which is most attractive at this moment in time is Barcelona. Barcelona are a team who are behind in La Liga and who are experiencing, by their standards, a bit of a poor season. The sale of Luis Suarez to Atletico Madrid, now, given his record at the Metropolitano, looks like a poor bit of business on their part. And of course, they managed to very much annoy their superstar talisman, Leo Messi, in selling Suarez, his very good friend and neighbour. And so with Real Madrid hunting down both Kylian Mbappe and Erling Haaland, having not invested heavily in the last two windows and looking to obviously regain their status as the number one club in Spain, are expected to at least sign one of those two players. We understand Kane is third on that list of strikers for Real Madrid, but that Barcelona and their second term of their president, Joan Laporta, understands that he must make a statement signing and sees Kane as one that he might be able to persuade, given that Madrid are more interested in Mbappe and Haaland. Therefore, with Kane's interest in leaving Tottenham in order to pursue trophies, and also, of course, Kane has never hidden his loyalty to Spurs, he would probably prefer not to play against them in the Premier League, and certainly Chairman Daniel Levy would prefer absolutely not to sell Kane to a main rival in the Premier League, because he knows the wrath that that might bring from his own supporters, as well as being the case that he could not justify it. Now, the big problem here, Duncan, in terms for Kane, that is the price tag. We know that Daniel Levy, we've discussed it many times, is a very, very hard negotiator. He's been quoted privately as saying that he expects £150 million for Kane should he leave. At 27, Kane is in the prime of his career. He currently earns around £130,000 a week, which is, obviously to the rest of us, that's a lot of money. But in terms of Premier League footballers and the top paid players, that's actually not that much. Now, Barcelona, as we know, and we have reported, have serious money concerns with regards to debts that need to be repaid, with regards to the fact that Laporta, as Graham Hunter told us, won the election on the basis that he opened up lines of credit worth around €300 million and possibly more. Kane's purchase would obviously be expensive. However, it would be also in installments. Therefore, Barca would not be required to pay the full amount up front. So therefore, doing the deal itself is not impossible. And it would be much more possible if Kane agreed to not take the remaining compensation on his contract, i.e. asked for a transfer. And in doing so, the club would save at least £20 million, probably more than that, in terms of what they would need to pay him either to leave or also if he stayed. So, Duncan, this is the eternal question with Kane, isn't it? It seems that every time he gets linked with another club, whether it's in England or elsewhere, Spurs give him a new contract.
It's true, and they've been very astute at retaining him at the club and making him central to their plan. And when he's fit, because this is the issue with Kane, is the persistent ankle ligament issues that have cost him substantial amount of playing time over several seasons now. When he's fit, he's fundamental and becoming more and more important and becoming, I think, a more rounded player. And I think that's something that will be attractive to Barcelona, is the way he's adapted his game to not just be a number nine, but to be a playmaker. I think he has 13 assists in 27 Premier League games this season. Two assists in five Europa League games, and that on top of the 20 goals he scored in those two competitions. He has a range of ability that you could see fitting into a team like Barcelona if they were able to secure them. And you're right, Laporta is under pressure to provide the supporters with a statement signing. He has spent a lot of time trying to secure capital to deal with the short-term debt payments that Barcelona face, and then create some to spend in the market. Look, I think this adds to the pressure on Tottenham to try and qualify for the Champions League. That's what Jose Mourinho is being asked to do. And another element of this is that Mourinho, in terms of planning for the summer transfer window, is working on the basis that money to be spent on signings, and we told you many months ago that he has been prioritising improvement at centre-back and in the centre of midfield, that money for those signings has to be raised from within the current squad. Now, there is no doubt that Mourinho does not want to sell Harry Kane, and he has been very important in that change of manner in which Kane has played, and building a system where he's creating goals as well as scoring goals. But if you're looking to raise money in the market to rebuild a squad, which it seems pretty clear does need quite substantial changes to change their attitude and to change their performances on the field, something that precedes Mourinho as a manager and something that Maurizio Pochettino talked very openly about before he lost his job there, then selling Kane is the one that's going to raise the most money. That's not to say it is something that Mourinho, Levy or Tottenham want to do, but it is something that I think will become more of a pressure point if they don't get Champions League football for next season.
Interesting you say that, Duncan, because I did speak to a senior person in the recruitment department at the Camp Nou, and they were specific about the fact that their data analysis team had examined Kane's performances this season in particular, and the stats that they provided were very impressive with regards to not just assists, but to passes completed, the way that he gets involved in a game, so game involvement as well, as obviously the goals he scores. And that's convinced that the recruitment department, that Kane, whereas maybe 3 years ago was seen as a kind of one-dimensional big English striker who got a lot of goals, is now more of a complete player and can play in the Barcelona way. And therefore, the money that they would need to spend on him would be less of a risk and more value, because he would be coming to play much more than just being the guy who, you know, sits in the 6-yard box waiting for the ball to come to him. So that, I think, is very interesting with regards to the possibility of Kane moving to La Liga. But I suppose my only doubt is that Kane has always been a bit of a homeboy, and certainly a Tottenham man as well, and that anything that he does will be weighed up against his family life and his experience of being a one-club man, etc. However, if he doesn't see trophies on the horizon at Tottenham Hotspur, then that may be the thing that forces his hand.
He has talked about his ambitions to win trophies on a number of occasions, and he's a far more mature individual. He comes across as someone who knows what he wants well now. So I think if it is part of his plans to play outside England, then you know, once you have the interest from a club like Barcelona and potentially a window to do something, then it becomes a live discussion and something to work your way into the window, considering as a potential option. One thing on the recruitment side from Barcelona, I can tell you, is that they will not be hiring Luis Campos as a recruitment specialist for the team. I can tell you Laporta had multiple discussions with Campos before winning the presidency, and the idea was to bring him in and use the recruitment skills, which he explained to us in some detail in a recent podcast, to spend that money that Laporta has secured in the most effective way as part of the Barcelona rebuild. Campos, I understand, is not happy and not convinced by the idea that he would work under a sporting chief executive, with Laporta deciding to appoint Mateo Almany, previously at Valencia, as a kind of member of the board who would head up a technical secretariat, including probably a technical director and other senior recruitment staff. And that structure is something that has convinced Campos that the Barcelona project was the wrong one for the next stage of his career.
Well, perhaps if Tottenham win the Carabao Cup final in 3 or 4 weeks' time, Harry Kane can just retire happy, knowing that he's won a trophy with Tottenham Hotspur. That could make him happy. Who knows? We shall see. Of course, we will bring you first news on Harry Kane and any potential transfer, as always, on the Transfer Window podcast. News now, which will concern, I think, or maybe excite, depends on your opinion. Liverpool fans, a very disappointing season given what they have achieved in the last two campaigns, is probably going to bring them maybe no trophies at all, but also maybe problems, Duncan, with regards to keeping their best, well, I'd say players, but I'll just say player, because you have information that they are already looking for a replacement for one of, probably, or maybe their best player.
Yeah, I'm not sure this is necessarily a problem for Liverpool. Something we've talked about in the podcast a lot, that they have got themselves in this position by signing players and selling off their better players at the top of the market, preparing themselves with targets who they feel can come in and do as good a job and ultimately do a better job. They have discussions with players, asking them what their long-term, medium-term intentions are. If they have a desire to play elsewhere, notify them of it so they can plan for this. And I think the plan was always that Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane would be sold, should the right bids come in for them, at a time that suited Liverpool, at a time that suited the players. They would get higher salaries, they'd get to play in another league, probably Spain, and Liverpool would buy a replacement in who could fit the system and do the job well. I don't think it's a secret that Salah and Jurgen Klopp don't have the easiest of relationships. You know, there have been issues between them, and that has affected slightly the way Liverpool play as a team, and that Salah, for all his elite goal scoring and his numbers remain exceptionally good this season, there are times when he doesn't contribute as much as would be liked in other areas of the game. Salah has been setting up this move. People around him have been talking about the idea that he would move. He's given a couple of interviews in Spain where he's talked about the attraction of playing at Spain and some point of it his career. There's another one this week, which wasn't quite as strongly phrased, but he still says, why not? Nobody knows what will happen in the future, so maybe one day, when asked about playing in Spain. Now, my information is that Liverpool have a budget to sign a striker who can also play wide in the summer window, and it's a substantial budget, and they're looking for a player of similar type to Mo Salah. Now, I'm not saying that means Salah is leaving. I'm just saying that Liverpool are doing the preparatory work to sign a player of his type. And we've talked in recent podcasts about the possibility that it's not just the Spanish clubs that would look at signing Salah. It's also Paris Saint-Germain, who are in the market for another forward, don't know what Kylian Mbappe is going to do. And there is an attraction within the ownership of the club, the club being owned and run by Qatar, to sign the most successful Arabic-speaking player of his generation, just ahead of their World Cup.
Must be a bit galling for Jurgen Klopp, given that he spent so much time working on Timo Werner's transfer, who's exactly that photo-fit player, only to see the club fail to pay the correct fee or to offer the correct fee for Werner, and then see him be taken from under their noses by Chelsea. And in fact, two things which are also relevant here. When you speak to football professionals, and by that I mean coaches and psychologists, etc., etc., quite a lot is made about body language, and I've seen Salah score, you know, he's still top scorer in the Premier League, I think, with 17 or 18 goals. And but he doesn't celebrate. He looks basically a little bit soured. And I wonder if that is significant. And obviously, Timo Werner, who would have been a perfect replacement, has been effectively ineffective for Chelsea in terms of scoring, has been very sporadic in terms of his form as well. I can see that particular situation with Salah becoming an issue for Liverpool. And any ideas, Duncan, in terms of names that might replace Salah, or is it too early for that?
Well, galling for Klopp, or did he duck a car crash in the Timo Werner?
How do you duck a car crash?
with great speed and agility. Given that Timo Werner did come to the Premier League, given that Chelsea paid a high price for him and high wages and a high agents fee, there is an argument that Liverpool made the right decision, or Fenway Sport Group made the right decision, in saying that the price, the total cost of the Werner deal, was too expensive and they were better to wait for someone else. Now, there's a counter argument that had Jurgen Klopp got the player who he'd spent so much time trying to recruit and who felt he would fit the Liverpool system, and you put him in the Liverpool system, then he performs better. That's the kind of conundrum that's faced by recruitment specialists. It would be interesting, given that there's a sense that Werner would be made available on the market if Chelsea were able to secure a better replacement, and they're one of those many clubs chasing Erling Haaland at the moment. Be interesting if Liverpool were to come back to that and say, well, we'll take him and we'll turn him into the player you were unable to do, which of course has happened before with a quite famous Liverpool forward who used to play for Chelsea.
Sorry. You can't seriously be talking about Fernando Torres, who was an absolute tanked at Chelsea.
No, I'm talking about Mohamed Salah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Well, I was going to say, I think Liverpool have done the best out of their different transactions with Chelsea regarding players moving between clubs because, yeah, Torres remains one of the great enigmas at £50 million.
Look, this is a test of Liverpool's recruitment, which has got a huge amount of credit for getting some deals spectacularly correct. Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, albeit Mane was someone they turned down when initially offered the player for a cheaper fee before he moved to England. Alisson, Andy Robertson. But if you look across the board of the recruitment that's been made in this period where the transfer committee has been in place, most of their deals, and we're excluding Andy Robertson here, are high transfer fee. Taking players who had established themselves as top performers at their clubs, who were taken from clubs where it was attainable to secure that player. If you put the money on the table, the club would sell. Roma will sell. Southampton will sell if you meet their money. There's not a, you know, you're not trying to take from a peer level club who won't sell to a direct competitor. Those ones have worked spectacularly well, but across the board, there's been quite a lot of failures in there. And this, I think, is going to be an interesting test of whether they can get the right name at the right price and be as successful as they have been in those, you know, those headline sales that turned them into Champions League winners and Premier League winners.
Not sure that Marina Granovskaya at Chelsea is quite willing to swallow her pride and give up on Timo Werner right at this moment in time. I suspect that, and also, of course, with our friend Big Tam Tuchel in charge as well, he will want to retain an asset, even if he is misfiring, but someone who clearly has a lot of talent and is young and can be coached. And has a very good record in the Bundesliga. But it will be interesting to see what Liverpool do in terms of if Salah wants to leave with regards to replacing him.
Yeah, look, I think another example of intelligent recruitment and clubs that in many ways been doing a better job than someone like Liverpool, or they're operating in a different end of the market, is Leipzig. And Leipzig this week signed Mohamed Simakan from the French league for a fee of less than 50 million euros. So they basically brought in, before the transfer window even opens, a replacement for Dayot Upamecano, who's going to Bayern Munich, and possibly for Ibrahim Konaté, who's been identified as a potential signing for Liverpool, is available for a 40 million release clause and is being pushed to the club. Now, Simakan, from people I talk to, he's considered the best young defender in the French league and probably ready to go to the Premier League. Again, recruitment specialists I've talked to, they think he's a better player than Konaté. So you're looking at Leipzig again, picking up top young talent on the market early and then selling the players that they bought a couple of years previously at a lower fee from the other leagues in Europe, and then banking a substantial profit, probably improving their team. I think that's the kind of deal which Premier League clubs regularly miss out on, and Simakan, I think, would have been interesting if he could go straight to Liverpool and play. Suggestion is he probably could. Certainly would be an option for a club like Tottenham, who are desperate to improve at centre back and need someone quick and capable on the ball. I think he would have been a very good option for Manchester United, who are looking for a quick centre back who's good on the ball to try and solve the infamous Harry Maguire problem. But where's he going? He's going to Leipzig, and what we will see is, if, you know, barring major injury, I think we will see him being a target for Premier League clubs probably within a year. But certainly in 2-3 years' time, he will move most likely to a Premier League club or to one of the big clubs in Spain for a multiple of the transfer fee that Leipzig have picked him up for this week.
On that subject, Duncan, it was great to see Harry Maguire being refloated in the Suez Canal today, and traffic moving more freely from Asia to Europe as a result. I'm sure Gareth Southgate was also relieved to have his centre back.
The greatest 3-point turn in history, as someone described it on Twitter today.
You should really give credit to that person.
I've forgotten their name.
It wasn't Harry Maguire, was it? So this is the first podcast of the week, which means here we're in villain time. Duncan, I'm going to hand over you to give us your villain before I do a hero.
Villain this week, I think a combination of UEFA and FIFA for not having the basics of goal line technology in place in the World Cup qualifiers. You know, I'm quite happy that we don't have VAR in that, and I would rather not have VAR in any level of football, but I find it bizarre that FIFA pushes and pushes and pushes these changes and refuses to accept their problems with VAR and has the rules of the game rewritten to try and make VAR work, but they don't have mandatory goal line technology in European World Cup qualifiers. And, you know, very obvious example of how that system, which is reliable, straightforward, very effective, only rarely does it have an error, was the Portugal-Serbia game where Cristiano Ronaldo scores a winner in the final minutes of the game, which was substantially over the goal line. Linesman and referee don't see it. Portugal end up drawing with Serbia, and the referee's forced to make an apology to Portugal as a nation, to the federation, and to Cristiano Ronaldo in the days after the game.
One of the greatest saves since Roy Carroll clawed the ball back from 3.5 feet over the line for Manchester United against Tottenham. Certainly one of the high points of the Premier League era, I should say.
And that was Old Trafford goal line technology as devised
Fergie
operated by
Ferguson. Alex Ferguson, yes. Can you imagine Fergie being a VAR? It'd be sensational. Okay, so my hero is a very obvious one because he has lit up the English Premier League for a decade and been a great asset to English football, as well as to Manchester City. And of course, that is Sergio Aguero, record goal scorer for the club, but also a good lad, but more importantly, scorer of brilliant goals and very important goals. So the Transfer Window Podcast's hero of this week is the one and only Sergio Aguero. This has been the first podcast of the week where, of course, we have brought you the news before it becomes news. If you like us and you like the podcast, leave us a rating and a review on all social media platforms at Transfer Podcast. That's Instagram and, of course, on Twitter. You can listen to us on YouTube and you will get notifications as well when you turn on them and YouTube. We will leave you until later in the week when we will return with another pod. Until then, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.